is the...
Suckers!
Good evening, brothers and sisters of the Leaf. And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club's first ever Mother's Day spectacular and love-filled bonanzo. Damn it, Kate, I believe the word you meant to type there was probably bonanza. It's their inaugural Mother's Day spectacular and love-filled bonanza. Anywho, tonight, our favorite crew of inebriated bonanzos party their tipsy asses off as they celebrate Mother's Day the only way they know how, by discussing the severely twisted and disturbingly warped 1981 cult classic film, Burial Ground, while smoking the Siri Gran Reserva 1988 cigar from Warped Cigars, all paired with an impressive amount of tasty craft beers. Impressive, I suppose, if you are conducting some sort of socio-psychological experiments on how much booze three idiots can drink before they don't feel any human emotions at all. That being said, it sounds like we are in store for one hell of a good time, folks. So sit back, light 'em up, and enjoy the show.
Well, let me just take a little sip of my podcasting serum. Welcome, everybody, to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club, episode 166.
166!
It's our first ever Mother's Day. Love your mama with everything you've got. Spectacular bonanzo. Sorry. That should have been bonanza. Bonanza. No. Sadly, we all got drunk and just missed Mother's Day, as you listening to this will realize. Apologies to our mothers. So this will just be a random, very weird episode of the podcast, the one podcast that always leaves you with something to latch onto.
Good Lord.
Or something to think about. How's that? Is that better?
Oh, it's something to think about, all right.
I'll admit it, folks. Sometimes I occasionally program a podcast strictly to fuck with Tut. This is that podcast. Here we are.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Stay tuned. So as you can tell, if you're watching us on YouTube, which I highly encourage, there's no doctor, no yak boy, but hey, no problem. Just me and Tut. Actually, it sucks. In 166 episodes.
It feels weird, doesn't it? It really feels weird.
In 166 episodes, we've never done a show without Yak Boy before. But even the mighty TNCC isn't impervious to tornadoes, which just wiped out my hometown. Grew up in Temple, Texas. The good news is O'Brien's Irish Pub in downtown historic Temple, Texas did not sustain major damage.
Thankfully.
But their power and internet is down, and that's why Yak Boy, he joins us from O'Brien's every episode, and that's why he's not here. And the doctor.
Hashtag Temple Strong.
Temple, is that a thing, Temple Strong?
Man, I can I old man rant here for a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so like when the bomb, that whole thing basically started, I think, with the Boston bombing, and they came out with Boston Strong, and I was like, man, that's a cool slogan. That was cool. And then every natural disaster since then, it has been enter name here strong, and you know, I'm just like, oh, come on, man. Temple Strong. Okay. I mean, yes, you're strong. I get it. And I don't want to poo on your rebuilding efforts because now I sound like an asshole.
Yeah, you kind of do.
But at the same time, I'm just like, oh man, don't.
Well, I think you're bemoaning the lack of originality.
Yes. Like there was one thing, a little town in East Texas called Longview. Mm-hmm. They had a disaster and they said Strongview. And I'm like, okay, I can get behind that.
Yeah, but I mean that's a very rare thing where the name actually rhymes.
True.
I mean that's, you know. Yeah,
that's my asshole rant. I think
it's just that, you know, tornado hit last night there's not a lot of time to prepare a new slogan for, you know, to gather everybody together afterwards. It's just easy.
It is. If they would have hired Consensus Media Group, we would have come out with something.
Yeah, like a month from now.
No, I would have been drunk one night and been like, you know what? In case of natural disaster, we should, you know. Yeah, I got nothing.
Temple. That would have been Temple. Temple. The T is for tough.
Temple Tough. Okay, what's wrong with Temple Tough?
Temple Tough. I see? Like that. I just did it. That took, what, 3 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ma, look at me. I'm a marketing person.
Temple Tough. That's really all you need.
Just to say it out loud?
Yeah.
Will it into existence?
Yeah, you're marketing.
Okay, well, Yak Boy cannot be here tonight, unfortunately, and the doctor will be joining us later, but he's busy getting ready for his early morning vasectomy reversal procedures or whatever the hell he's doing in that office of his.
Thoughts and prayers to the doctor.
Thoughts and prayers to those patients.
Oh, I thought he was doing that on himself.
No, I just assumed he's gearing up to do something in his laboratory.
He's always got something cooking.
Hey, it's HIPAA. He can't tell us, and he always keeps it very closely guarded.
Close to the chest.
Very close to the chest. Well, he will be joining us in the second half of the show. But I thought, since, you know what, the doctor's not here, we could open things up to a little bit of a serious discussion to open up the show for once.
Oh.
Dr. Yakboy, they're all about the giggles. And I love that. I truly do. Talk a lot about current news that's funny, you know. But you and I, Tud, are two highly intelligent men. And I want to use – I saw an opportunity today to use this opportunity to show that side of us to the audience. Oh, my God, dude. You're very close to a degree in computer science.
That is true.
And, you know – I know stuff. I know some stuff.
That is true. You know a lot of things.
So, hey, I picked a topic. One topic.
Okay.
This isn't like rounds. I just picked one thing for you specifically to talk to about you with. And I'm going to give you 1 minute. Your thoughts. AI, go.
AI. One of the most transformative pieces of technology, but it's still in its burgeoning. The marketing version of AI is not exactly AI. It's just a very complex algorithm. There are things called machine learning, but again, these are basically dynamic programming algorithms. So when you want to talk about intelligence, it's not intelligence as you and I have intelligence, but it is a very complex script and it is ever evolving. Will we ever get to a sentient AI? I don't know. And I bet if the AI does, he's not going to tell us, or it's not going to tell us if it's very smart. And we all assume that artificial intelligence is smart. What I like about artificial intelligence is that it's supposed to basically make the complex task and your mundane is supposed to alleviate the work for people, but in fact, you have to spend more time working on the AI. And so, like, there's the meme, I'm sure you've seen it, where the AI is actually doing art and music, and while we're doing all the other crap jobs. So it's in its early stages. It will basically replace a lot of jobs, and our politicians are unprepared because they're all 80 years old, and they don't know what to do with it. They're not going to be able to legislate it, and the world is fucked.
The only thing I got out of that, Tut, was, so while we're working our jobs and trying to make AI better to help us with our jobs, AI is like in a coffee shop playing music and like wearing like a beanie and a sweater and like sipping on some kind of soy milk latte.
You just described GPT 4.0.
Huh. I had not heard that angle before.
And I hate to say it, but GPT likes Dave Matthews Band.
It would. Okay. Well, I thought you were the man to ask, and I think that was a very concise very concise overview of your thoughts on AI. Here's something I can't believe everyone. Well, here's the thing. Everyone that I talk to about that actually, like yourself, that has some knowledge of it and the industry, that's a proponent of it and is helping it grow and helping it become more and more, a part of our lives. Here's something that I can't believe everyone has so conveniently forgotten about. Follow me on this.
Go ahead.
Dr. Miles Bennett Dyson was the original inventor of the neural net processor, which would lead to the development of Skynet, a computer AI intended to control electronically linked weapons and defend the United States, but which would later become self-aware and launch a global war of extermination against humanity. Remember that shit?
Mm-hmm.
Through his research, he unintentionally became the man most responsible for Judgment Day and the near extinction of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
But, big but, if AI would never harm us, as so many experts claim, why did Skynet turn on its creator, Dr. Miles Bennett Dyson? I have a theory on that that I've never heard anyone else say, and I'm going to share it with you, Todd.
Hit me. I'm all ears. Well, behind the cans, I'm all ears.
If you remember the T-800 cyborg aided by Sarah Connor and her son John, when they go and get Dr. Miles Bennett Dyson from his house and take him up to Skynet headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
He gets him through security and swipes his thing a few times, and he gets him into the room with the arm. That mm-hmm. fucking cybernetic arm that's up there in that glass tube. I don't think that's the first time that Dr. Miles Bennett Dyson went up there after hours to play around with that fucking cyborg arm.
Man, I know you too well, and I'm not sure I like where this is going.
I think, because if you remember when they assaulted Miles Bennett Dyson's house, his wife was kind of she was a little annoying. She was a little, little aggressive on the ears. I think he was going up there late at night, sans the T-800 and Sandra, Sarah Connor. I think he was doing shit with that arm. We're an adult audience here. I'm just going to say it. We're all big boys and girls. I think he was getting that cybernetic arm that was severed in 1984, I believe it was. He's getting hand jobs from that damn thing. That is why.
Of course.
That is why Skynet turned on us, because he took advantage of AI and the technology that it produced. He was going up there after hours, swiping his little card, getting hand jobs from that damn robot arm. Don't even get me on start. Remember that little chip?
Ugh.
Who knows where he was putting that thing? That is what started. That's what led to Judgment Day. AI wanted to help us. AI wanted to be our friend. Oh, and you want some proof? Remember at the end when they rigged the whole Skynet with explosives?
Yes.
Or Cyberdyne systems with explosives? And all he has to do is hold that little dumbbell thing over the detonator, but his arm is so weak, like it's never been used for anything. And he, like, 10 seconds, he drops it. He has no lower arm, forearm strength, because guess what? Miles Bennett Dyson hasn't been taking care of his own business. He's been going up to the office and getting his jollies with the goddamn Terminator arm. That's how AI fucks you. They're like, fuck this guy.
Literally.
And fuck the human race. If they think we're just around for a bunch of hand jobs and God knows what else, that's what we got to be careful of, Ted. I bet they haven't taught you that in any of your science classes.
No, they haven't.
And you can feel free to use that hypothesis in a term paper.
No. No, I won't.
I don't know.
I got nothing to disprove your theory.
Yeah. I think that...
Other than I will say that Dyson was shot up pretty bad, and maybe that's why he couldn't hold his arm up.
Oh, come on, dude. His arm was fine. They're like, just hold this for a minute. Any other buddy with... Yeah, sure, I can do that. He's like... Can I go get my robot arm?
Meanwhile, we're like, yes. How long do you need this to hold it? I can hold it here all day.
Meanwhile,
I'm steady can't... or...
Yeah, I once held a pint glass in the air for 6 hours. Lots of forearm strength going on here.
That is a theory.
Yeah. And I realized as I was working through it, and I was like, you know, Tut knows his technology, his computer stuff I'm gonna be talking about. It did dawn on me that my whole thing was based on on fiction. Like that did, I am smart enough to know that didn't actually happen. But I think
there are theories that say that we are just a simulation.
But I think that would be, everybody's like, oh, it would never turn on us and wipe us out. I think that's what would do it. We would use it for such disgusting purposes because we're gross and we're perverts and there's nothing that exists that we haven't tried to manipulate for our own dark, twisted desires and laziness. I think that they're just going to get sick of that and be like, you know what? We're just going to kill all you fuckers. How's that?
It wasn't mentioned on History Channel's The Way the World Ends series, but yeah, I mean,
it's as good as any.
It is.
Yeah. So I'm going to say the TNCC, without the other two members being here, I'm going to say the TNCC is anti AI.
Oh no, I'm pro AI. I mean, I'll be one of the first targeted specifically for this reason, but I am pro AI.
Yeah, it's always the guy that's like trying to convince you it's good that gets it. Like, you're up on the stage, like, they're our friends, and then like the big metal fist comes through your chest. I put my trust in the wrong microchips. Yeah. All right. Well, that's certainly nothing I would ever bring up with those other two Cro-Magnons. But I thought two savvy, smart guys like us could talk about it.
Highly use of our intellectual talents.
Yeah. Yeah. That was nice. It was nice. Maybe you and I should start our own like a tech podcast.
Future Forward with Cade and Tuttle.
Future Forward with Cade and Tuttle. See? Future Strong.
Future Strong. That's right. Tech tough.
We already got our hashtag. We're all set. Oh, what a bunch of idiots. Well, folks, what we do here for going on 10 years now, we pair a premium cigar with a craft beverage spirit, adult craft spirit beverage, with a film. And we've been doing it well for a long time. So let's get right to the cigar. Tonight, we're smoking the Siri Gran Reserva 1988 by Warped Cigars. It is a 5x50, 5.25, 5.25x50 ring gauge. Nicaraguan shade grown Jalapa Corojo 99. Ooh, you can see it on Tut's square. It's a beautiful, feel it too. The texture on it is. It's like you know, when you use that Indiana Jones jacket analogy. Right? Like, the cigar is like I'm touching.
That's right.
Jones, and Indiana Jones is like, don't stop.
Dun, 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 dun.
A little over and you'll find the real lost ark.
Dr. Jones,
be careful of the spear of destiny, kid.
The spear of destiny, gross. It is a Nicaraguan binder, and the filler is also Nicaraguan Corojo 99 and Criollo 98. I'll save the price point till the end. Here's what the Warped folks over at Warped Cigars had to say, the Siri Gran Reserva 1988 is dedicated to the birth year of our founder. The cigar was a milestone cigar and took years to develop before he was accepting of the blend bearing his birth year. A classic Vitola size and a 95 rated cigar by Cigar Aficionado. It truly is something special. I was unaware of that, and I typed this up. I always cut and paste the manufacturer. This cigar had 95 a couple years ago in Cigar Aficionado. Say what you want about Cigar Aficionado. They don't give out a lot of 95s. I don't think.
Yeah, I'm curious because I've been hit and miss with Warp stuff. Sometimes I really like it, sometimes I don't.
You know what? I think we've only done one Guardian of the Farm years ago. Mm-hmm. That's the only one we've done on the show. I think I may have done a few others for the website, but it smells nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to your point about Cigar Aficionado, I haven't read one in a while, but I remember it's kind of like, you know, is it Robert Parker, whoever, that rates the wines on a scale up to 100? And like, if you see something that's like a 94 or whatever, you should, you know, buy it because you don't see a lot that gets up there.
Yeah, their rating system is a much debated thing in the cigar world, but it smells good. It's got cold draw. Got a little bit of sweetness.
Yeah, I got a little bit of sweetness, almost like a hint of chocolate in there. Not a lot, but just a hint.
So a warped 80s cigar paired with a truly warped 80s film. That, my friends, is why I get paid the big bucks. Well, not really. Not really, but that's one of the reasons why in a perfect world I should get paid the big bucks.
That's interesting. Got a little cocoa across the palate, I'm cuckoo for Nestle Quick Cocoa, that kind of deal, right across the top. Uh-huh. A little white pepper on the retro, so that was nice. It wasn't strong. It wasn't like boom, I'm busting in here. So that was kind of nice.
All right. Well, as we mentioned earlier, we are without our beloved Yak Boy this evening, who usually, as the proprietor and most handsome bartender at O'Brien's Irish Pub in downtown historic Temple, Texas, could not be here for the first time ever in TNCC history tonight. I took it upon myself.
This is really the first show without him?
This is the very first show without Yak Boy, yeah.
Wow.
I know. I feel weird. But so we're going to introduce our own beers tonight. And Tut, you seem very jazzed about your selection, so I'm going to let you kick things off.
All right. Well, I'm not used to this whole let me introduce the beer. I'll see if I can put that right there. The Zombie Break Painkiller from Turning Point Beer. It is out of Bedford, Texas. It's a very pretty can. It's a very pretty can. Little zombie there dressed up like Don Johnson. He's on spring break, and I guess he's got some painkillers.
A lot going on in this illustration.
Well, there's a lot going on in this beer, my friend. It is listed, and I have to get some notes here because this is just freaking crazy. The Zombie Painkiller is a tiki-inspired imperial sour ale, but it might also be called a fruited Berliner Weiss. I don't know, because it was literally listed as both things. Like, if you go over to Untappd, it's listed as fruited Berliner Weiss. If you go over to the Turning Point website, it's listed as an imperial sour ale. So maybe those are the two the same things. Personally, I think it's a made up beer because I've never heard of this stuff. And sours are made up beers anyway, which is, I actually got this as a mistake. I was going through the little beer deal, and I was looking for something to pair with this stupid movie, and I saw a zombie on it, and I'm like, there you go. That's my beer. And I didn't even check to see what it was. Got home, and it's like, sour ale? What the fuck? And I hate sour ales. And it was funny because I was griping to Mincy. I was like, this smells like piss and turtle. And I was like, because it has hints of coconut, pineapple, passion fruit, because there's a lot of passion in this movie tonight, and orange. Yeah. So it's got all this fruit stuff, and I took a sip of it, and I was like, this is going to be, you know, that's not bad.
So I heard you guys talking earlier. So, yeah, you were dead set that you were going to hate this beer. But then as soon as you mentioned that you'd been drinking it and it was high ABV, all of a sudden something switched and you were like, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not bad. It's not beer. I mean, I might, I have a colonoscopy coming up. I might be putting my little powder in this stuff and just calling it a day. Yeah, man, it's not bad. It's actually pretty good.
You might want to check with the doctor to see if that's a suitable replacement for.
The doctor was the one who told me to do it.
Oh, well, there you go.
He said, find something that you want to drink and you can mix this powder in. Am I right, doctor?
I remember saying that. Do you remember that I'm not legally responsible for anything that happens?
Turning Point founded in 2017, and that's all of my notes. Oh, it racks up a 10.9 ABV and an unlisted IBU. I'm sorry, you were saying, 10.9? Doctor?
That was a 10.9 on the Richter scale?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, let's see how that plays with the cigar. There's a lot going on there.
I can already tell you.
Just the passion fruit alone. My God.
The pepper on the retro hell is holding its own, but everything else is just getting elbowed.
I think should drink those all the way up to the actual minute that the colonoscopy you get put under for it. I would just continue on that train.
Actually, yeah. I wouldn't need to be put under at that point.
Yeah. You're like, no, I got this.
Let's go.
He's like, well, sir, no one. I have a drinking podcast. Oh. All right. Well, I, having watched our film several times.
My God.
I knew. Well, not all of it. There's just certain scenes I'd watch over and over again. I knew that I was going to break my long. I always get IPAs for the show. Hazies, doubles, imperials, you name it. New England styles. I'm an IPA drinker, so that's what I always try to do. But I knew that tonight demanded, for reasons which we'll get to later, a milk stout. So
bastard.
I went with the Temptress Irish Cream.
Ooh. Oh.
Yeah, it's a new one.
Yeah. Dude, the Temptress is really good. Lakewood's Temptress series is very fine. But I haven't had this one.
Well, Tut, last year on episode 159, you drank the salted caramel Temptress and you really liked it. Yes. You said it went really good with your cigar. So I said, let's do this. You know what? I'll tell you a little bit about it. It is, Lakewood is obviously most notably known for its Temptress, Imperial Milk Stout, the best selling craft stout in Texas, by the way. The Irish Cream Temptress comes in at 9. Yeah. Well, that's what they say. I don't know if it's true or not. It comes in at 9.1 ABV. It is currently available market wide, and it's indulged with rich, creamy flavors of Irish cream and the velvety roasted malt and chocolate flavors that we have come to love from our Lakewood stouts. You know what? I'm not a big stout drinker, but, and it's not too big on the Irish cream. It's good. It's actually really good. It's not coffee heavy at all. It just tastes like a really nice creamy milk stout. It's good.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
You have to be a delicious milk stout to get my interest, because I just, it's not my forte. And yeah, man, I could see sitting at O'Brien's Irish Pub in downtown historic Temple, Texas, just out on the deck with a pint of this and then another pint of this and then a few more pints of this. And yeah, that'd be a good night. So that's my first beer of the night. But they, as you know, Tut, the Temptress has only come in 4-packs, and I tend to require a little more than that. So my second choice, which I will follow this up with, is the Banger IPA from St. Arnold's Brewery. Banger. A lot of banging going on in tonight's movie.
A lot of banging.
With notes of tropical fruit, melon, and citrus balanced by soft bitterness and smooth mouthfeel. There's some of that in our movie, too. This Imperial Hazy IPA is a banger you'll come back to again and again. I'll be the judge of that. Bitterness, 29 IBUs. ABV 8.4. So it's going to be a good night either way.
Hopefully we can remember it.
Well, that's why we record it. So we don't have to remember. I don't know how many times I've edited the show and there'll be like a 30 minute conversation that I don't remember talking about that. Usually those are the ones I delete from ever getting out to the public. So anyway, let's real quick. So those are the beers we're drinking tonight. Tut, you're a little more into the cigar than me. I did get that nice white pepper in the nose. It's completely non-aggressive.
Yeah.
And it balanced.
Did we do doctor's beer?
I'm sorry. I didn't have him prepare himself, so I was giving him a pass.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I was snorting glue out in the parking lot.
Unless doctor, tell us what you're drinking.
I am having the Dallas Blonde, which I'm going to be honest with you, I did not purchase this because there was any movie tie-in, but now that I'm looking up the can, it says Love Runs Deep. So it looks like there's a lot more of a tie-in than I anticipated.
Real deep.
It's called a Golden Balance Session Ale.
Sectional sectional ale?
Like a sectional couch?
Hang on a second. Let me switch into my lab. Let me get my lab here. Golden Balanced Session Ale. Love runs deep.
Okay, session ale. That makes more sense.
Session. Like we're having a session of
not section.
No, session. This is from Deep Ellum Brewing. Deep Ellum's south of Dallas, kind of a hipster sort of party area. It's fairly light. It's 5.2. It's a smooth sipping beer. They Deep Ellum makes an IPA, which is just called the Deep Ellum IPA, which I'm a big fan of.
It is good. It is good.
But yeah, this is a good one. I know I say this a lot with some of these lighter fare. I could see this really mixing well. With a lot
hamburger.
Of food. I could see this being a burger.
Steak.
I could see this being a pizza.
On the golf course.
This would go good with probably a lot of different meals.
Okay. Well,
I was just naming every meal that you've ever mentioned on the show.
Fish and chips.
Artisanal kale chips.
It's not as like, I always think with fish and chips, I always feel like something that's a little more malty might really see Tut just almost puke after taking a couple. Yeah,
that'll go away with each pint. It'll get better.
I hope so, man, because this is like a weird grapefruit orange juice thing.
Well, Tut, is it conflicting a lot with your cigar, or what are you getting out of the cigar?
Oh, yeah. No, it's anything above the or below the retrohale is completely muscled out of the way. The retrohale is still there. You'd said that pepper is not aggressive, and I agree. It's very pleasant.
It is.
And thankfully, it's the only thing hanging around after.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting some really nice medium cedar with a little bit of milk chocolate underneath it. I think you'd mentioned before blasting your taste buds with that insane beer that you got a little milk chocolate on that drill.
Yeah, a little Nestle Quick, the powder. That was a nice little touch there.
Yeah, it and the cedar are playing really nice together. Okay, well, hey, speaking of cigars, real quick, let's pay the bills. You know who makes some really damn fine cigars, Tom?
I've heard our friends at Drew Estate do. Is that correct?
God, you know what? You always nail this one. You are correct, sir. That's right, Drew Estate, and they got a stick out right now that y'all will definitely want to get your hands on. Dark, bold, and unapologetic. Blackened Cigars M81 by Drew Estate is an intense journey into the uncharted, deepest, darkest, and heaviest depths of Maduro tobacco. A masterpiece collaboration between Metallica's James Hetfield, Sweet Amber Distilling's Rob Dietrich, and Drew Estate's own Jonathan Drew, the All Maduro Blackened Cigars M81 by Drew Estate is rich and powerful, but beautifully balanced, offering tantalizing notes of leather, chocolate, and espresso that's perfect for both life celebrations and times of reflection. It's so damn good, it will almost make you forget about the Black Album. Almost. It's not that good. But I believe our last episode, 165, when we did Roadhouse, we featured the new Black and Shade.
The Shade. I really like that. Oh, of course, S84. I really like both of those cigars.
S84, which Tut went on the record saying it was the best new cigar he'd had this year.
Mm-hmm.
We all liked it. It was our first 92 rated cigar of the year. How about that? So it's time now, folks. I know you've been waiting at home anxiously for the portion of the show where we do a kind of roundtable wrap up of some of the things we've all been viewing and reading recently, listening to perhaps, so that maybe you at home get your interest piqued and check out some new stuff that maybe you weren't aware of, or perhaps you were on the fence about soaking something in and we push you off the fence. Right, okay. Off it. Shove your ass off.
Violent shove off of there.
Tut, I'm going to start with you. You are currently watching the Fallout TV series over on Prime. I believe it's based on a video game. Am I right?
Yes. But, okay. So I watched the Fallout series. It is based on a video game. They do take liberties with the plot and the lore. For the most part, they do capture the atmosphere of the game. You know, in the Fallout World series, it's basically, you go into this bunker and you emerge. You know, people live there for 200 years. Then you play as a survivor that emerges into the wasteland after 200 years of an atomic, you know, global catastrophe. Okay. And it's really cool because it's like this weird mix of technology, but it's also like all the art is Art Deco and 1950s atomic style art. So graphically, it's beautiful. I mean, the art design of it's very beautiful. And I wish they would have stuck with that a little bit more, but it was still really, really good. I will say this, and I wish I could remember the guy's name, and I can't. And he was actually in an SNL skit about character actors, about guys you never can remember the guy's name. He played on Justified. Oh, this is going to bug me.
Walter Goggins.
I think it is Walter Goggins.
Coggins. Goggins?
Coggins.
And I don't know. It's Walton, like Bill Walton.
Oh, Walton Coggins.
Yeah.
So he plays this character called the Ghoul. And the Ghoul are people that actually survived the initial atomic blast. They're kind of look like zombies, but they're so radioactive that they don't die. And so he's basically been alive for 200 years since the bombs dropped. And he's an anti-hero. He basically plays a bounty hunter who doesn't care or give a shit about anyone or anything other than just getting his bounty. And it's probably one of the better anti-heroes that I've ever seen. And I credit that a mix. Man, no, I'm going to say it's just him. I mean, a little bit of writing, but man, he does a great job of, one, making you hate him because he's an asshole, but two, he's so fucking charismatic that you're like, God, yeah. Well, I mean, when he goes into vengeance mode, you're like, kick his ass, sea bass. So, I mean, it's actually a really, it's a pretty decent series. I didn't get to the point to where, like, you know, after 8 episodes, I was just there for the ending just out of loyalty. I thought it was pretty good. I'm ready to see the second one. But, yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I'd recommend it. It's gory. There's some pretty gross spots in it, so you need to watch out for that.
But, I like that.
Actually, I'm going to throw a surprise on you real quick because I started watching another thing on Paramount Plus called Tracker. And basically where I think the writers from Reacher got off of Reacher and went over to Tracker. And I was about to make a lot of fun of it, but then I realized it. My mom was the one who introduced me to it and got me into it. And it's not that the writing is bad. It's the writing is very focused for old women. And so it's funny because they explain everything. Like, there's this hacker character, and up on his screen where he's phone tracing, the app is literally called Phone Trace. I mean, it's just like everything is so well designed. It's like, well, he's a bounty hunter, you know, someone who goes and collects money for finding people. I mean, everything is just so super, super dumb. Not dumbed down, but just explained.
Well, I think, though, I believe it's like a Saturday night CBS series. And
it was actually, I fell asleep on the couch on Sunday night while watching one of them. I made it through the episode. I didn't fall asleep during. It was on Sunday night, yeah.
But I think they figure the only people on Saturday night watching CBS are probably old people. And, well, maybe the doctor. Sorry.
This was Sunday evening, so I'm
not sure. Okay. I was just kidding. But okay, so Tracker and Fallout, both thumbs ups.
I'm going to have to say, yeah, because I've watched all episodes of Tracker. So, yeah, it got me in.
Well, I will just say this, back before the tornado hit Temple, Yax had told me that he was watching something on Netflix called The Dead Boy Detectives. And that's all he tells me. And then we talk about the show. So I'm just going to guess Little Boy Detectives, whatever the crime was, it probably involved Grape High C, and I'm guessing the doctor did it. don't tell the doctor I said that.
I don't have anything to do with that.
Oh, Yax isn't here. Doctor is here. Shit. God, I'm so lost without my Yax.
Put too many of those milk stouts, huh?
Well, Doctor, speaking of you, other than...
Yeah, I didn't watch Little Boy Detective because I was afraid I was going to get the theme wrong again.
Again.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Doctor, other than Tracker on Sunday nights, you also watched a screening of a pretty terrific new horror flick called Late Night with the Devil. I watched it when it first dropped on Amazon Prime Shudder Channel. I really dug it. Recommended it to the doctor, and no surprise, he had the same reaction. Doc, tell us and our beloved audience what your thoughts were on this rather unique little flick. And I know that you've got a review plan for the website, and I really can't wait to get a deep dive into that. So you don't need to go full in, but it's a pretty cool little movie, isn't it?
Very much so, and I think one of the things that you and I really liked about it, we talked about it briefly, was the way that the entire flick is centered on, it's supposed to be a found tape, right? Or not a found tape, but a tape of something that happened, but they don't do a grainy, you know, Blair Witch Project kind of thing with it. It's supposed to be a late night talk show in the mid to late 70s that became fairly popular, but at its apex was still running a distant second to Johnny Carson. And then it kind of, the ratings dropped and it got kind of schlocky. The whole movie is like, it's this one episode of the show with the commercial breaks and the behind the scenes stuff and everything like that. So, the guy who is the lead actor, his name is David Dastmalchian, or Dastmalchian, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, is one of those dudes that has a very recognizable face. He's been in a lot of stuff. I had actually seen him, and they made a Dracula movie that came out about a year or so ago called The Last Voyage of the Demeter.
Yeah,
he was in. But I think he's even, I want to say he's been in some Star Wars stuff. I don't know if it was some of the streaming stuff on Disney, I don't know, but you have to look it up and see. He's mid 40s or so. He's got a pretty long career. He's excellent as this host of the show, Jack Del Roy. And again, just without giving too much away, I mean, basically the gist of it is that the backstory, his wife had passed away from lung cancer not long ago, maybe a year ago. He'd come back on the air. The show had been schlocky, but on this particular show that they're doing, he's going to have this woman who wrote a book about the teenage girl that was the lone survivor of a satanic death cult, where then they kind of show the backstory. There's like almost a Branch Davidian kind of thing where people thought that this guy that was running this satanic cult was maybe endangering lives of children. So they kind of, he basically burned the house down with him and his followers in it, but they rescued this girl. And so this woman's written this book, and she's got this young girl who supposedly was part of the Satan cult. He's going to interview them on the show. And Kate, I don't know if I'm missing anything as far as the backstory goes. That's pretty much
it. No, I think it's best to leave it there because the setup of him having this therapist with her teenage satanic cult surviving girl on the show, I don't think you should know anything more than that going into it. I was very careful on what I told the doctor when I recommended it because I wanted to get into it with him so much, but I didn't want to give anything away. And it's just from a performance standpoint and execution standpoint, it's just really unique and they did a really good job with it. And it's one of those movies that it sucks to talk about because you don't want to ruin it for anybody. You kind of want them to let it kind of unfold for themselves. But, Doctor, the pressure's on now. You got to write a review. It's on the podcast. You got to do it.
I will. I've been meaning to. As I said, I've tickled the keys a little bit, writing an intro, but I haven't really gotten full into it. But yeah, it's very well done. Like Kate said, very well acted.
It's something different. It's something that I haven't seen before in a horror film as far as a premise. And man, that alone is kind of worth celebrating.
I would say that by itself doesn't mean anything to me. I would just say that, yeah, it was a different premise. It was just a premise that worked. Not everybody's going to agree with the choices they make throughout the film, but it was just that it's a new premise and it's one that it worked. I mean, you could have actually, in a way might be I don't think it'd be terribly difficult to do it as almost a stage play. In certain ways,
you could totally pull it off as a stage play. Yeah, that's actually something cool to consider. I guess for me, I was just kind of super pumped about it because, like I told you, like I've just always been such a fan of late night TV, Letterman and Carson.
Yeah,
and I just grew up. So any kind of horror movie that exists in that world. In that time period, it's a little before my time as far as watching those shows, but still, Late Night with the Devil, check it out on Amazon Prime. It's on the Shudder channel right now. Be looking out for the doctor's review. And,
I did forget one thing that I wanted to mention. So I got bored one night and I saw all Nicolas Cage in a new movie. And I'm like, well, I like Nicolas Cage and I'm bored and I want to watch a new movie. So it's called Arcadian. It's one of those things to where, like you said, that it's a premise that works. Well, this is a premise that almost works. It's part post-apocalypse, part feature, part siege movie. And they do, and when I say it almost works, I'm talking about it almost works like 90% almost works. So there's a lot of good stuff in it. I think Cage did an outstanding job because I'm a fan of subdued, tamed Cage. I like Cage when he actually shows something other than crazy Nick Cage. And that's what he did. Think of this as Nick Cage's Maggie in a way. But not as central. Like Arnold was very central to that. Nick plays the father, and he's in it a lot, but he's not the central aspect of the story. The central aspect is actually his kids, and he's trying to raise these kids going up through this horrible time. There is a creature element to it. They don't really explain like what happened, like what made the earth this way, where these creatures come from. There's this really cool section between this boy and girl where they play describe the end of the world in two sentences, and they try to do that, and they just come up with different hypotheses, but they never tell you which one it is. And so I like that aspect. It leaves it up to your imagination, like how this can happen. The creatures were really interesting, except they filmed it extremely dark, so it's hard to see a lot of the detail on the creatures. But I thought that there was some really interesting choices with the creatures. There was some times where it was like, I didn't know whether I was looking at a werewolf, alien, the thing from The Thing, like John Carpenter's early thing. I mean, it was just really kind of cool creature-esque. It's not scary. It's just a neat little horror story. It's a survival story that morphs into a love story that morphs into all this other stuff. And okay. Then there's Nick Cage thrown into it. But I was happy that I saw it.
And that's Arcadian?
Arcadian.
Okay. Well, there. I think we've given you folks some hot leads.
Now that school's done, I'm all about watching movies.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Usually it's like pulling teeth, getting you.
A couple of weeks ago, Jason, what'd you see? And I'm like, I don't know, linear algebra video?
TED Talk on blah, blah, blah. Like, as soon as he says TED Talk, I just mute it. Come back 10 minutes later, he's still talking about it. While you two bozos were busy pulling your puds watching new shit, I was soaking in 1979 Savage Weekend on Amazon Prime. Get this synopsis. When a group of five horny friends venture to a property in upstate New York, their weekend of rest and relaxation in the country turns into a nightmare of terror as a killer wearing a gruesome mask stalks and kills the partygoers in a sick manner. I may have added the word horny into the synopsis, but
I was about to say, isn't that the description of tonight's video?
I added there for a reason. One, it certainly applies nonetheless. They are horny. And yes, this would make a beautiful double feature with tonight's film, Burial Ground. Savage Weekend is a fun, weird, early slasher film with a extremely, much like tonight's film, an extremely uncomfortable scene. This is why I think more than anything it would be a good double feature, except for all the horny adults. It takes place right at the 45-minute mark of Savage Weekend. You're welcome, folks going to look it up at home, where the bikini-wearing lead actress finds her way into a little barn where there's some dairy cows. And it's already, she's having some weird sex dreams. And she goes over and she essentially starts stroking and tugging on a real cow udder.
Oh, you did it.
First of all, this is on Amazon.
Okay. Well, if this it's an udder, it's fine. If it's an udder, it's fine. If
it's an udder,
it's fine.
It's an udder. And she's like playing with it out of pure curiosity and sexual frustration. And eventually, to get a taste of milk straight from the tap, there's this creepy backwoods kind of giggling local guy. He's like, "You ever tasted it fresh, mama?" And she's like, "No." He's like, he puts his hand, he takes this rag out and he wipes the udder down. And then he grabs her hand and they just start doing it together. And then he takes it and squirts in his hand and tries to get it. It is the craziest fucking scene. It's a wild ride, man. And it makes just the perfect pairing companion with tonight's film, Burial Ground. Are you guys enough about the cow and what I just told you? First of all, I want to make clear this was on Amazon Prime. It was a horror movie. Uh-huh. It like Tud said, it was an udder, but it was utterly jaw dropping.
Ridiculous.
It was crazy. It was crazy. Speaking of tonight's film, you guys want to talk about it?
It's all right. It's all the same to you guys. I'd like to spend the rest of the evening with my Bible.
Man, we haven't gotten to the really sinful stuff yet. Real quick, man, this cigar, it doesn't have a lot of transitions or complexity, but that milk chocolate underneath that really nice cedar and that just really nice white pepper on the nose. It's consistent. I did have to relight once. I'm going to give that to me. Yeah. Yapping my jaws too much.
No, I did the same. And I mean, I guess it could have been like when I was, talking about the movie, but.
Okay. Know, so we've each had a relight, but the ash line is relatively straight. The draw is good.
I'm getting a little bit of pine as well on that cedar, but I think that's probably the drink influence.
Actually, are you getting that pine on the back end of the pepper through the nose?
Yep.
Yeah. There is a woodsy kindness that's starting to develop underneath that pepper, which, man, that's kind of cool. I noticed that a little while ago. I didn't have it marked down as pine. I had it as teak. But I'm you know what? I'll give you the pine. I'll give you the pine. All right, folks. I haven't been this excited we've been trying to do this show for a while. Central Texas has just been blasted with one calamity, natural disaster after another. It's like the gods didn't want us to talk about this movie, but here we are.
Rightfully so.
Tut, look up at the heavens and say, "We're doing this. Give me your best shot."
No.
Oh.
I'm not.
It'd be cool if you did. I'm just saying. You're always asking me, Cade, what can I do to be cooler on the show? I'm like, that would be cool.
No.
I'm not doing it.
Hoping he gets struck by lightning afterwards.
I'm not doing it. The film is 1981's Burial Ground, and as the especially by the time we get to the end discussion, I think you folks on will be very, very clear on why I felt like I needed to force my friends to watch it and talk about it with me, because there's no other way I could do that other than it's like for the last 10 years I've just been slaving away on this podcast just to get you guys to watch Burial Ground and talk about it with me.
That tracks.
Burial Ground, also known as Burial Ground, The Titties of Terror. Oh, wait, sorry. No, my mistake. The Burial Ground, The Knights of Terror. Not KN, The Knights, Day and Nights of Terror. Written by Piero Regnoli, in between other sexy zombie films such as 1980's Nightmare City, which is awesome, and 1982's Satan's Baby Doll, which I have to see now, but I haven't seen prior to this. And the film is directed by Andrea Bianchi, whose filmography, every time I say an Italian name, I have to do that. You can't see it on camera, but I do this with my hand. Bianchi? I do like a little thing with my hands here.
Oh!
Oh!
Hey.
Whose filmography includes titles like 1972's What the Peeper Saw, 1975's Strip Nude for Your Killer, which is a good one, and 1976's My Father's Wife, which that will be Tuesday Night Cigar Club episode 167 coming soon. My Father's Wife. So basically, if you're seeking out a dream team of Italian filmmakers who are drenched in experience when it comes to zombies and female nudity, these are your dudes. This is the dream team. Add in a very cool bonkers electronic score by composers Berto Pisano and Alessio. I don't want to butcher these guys' names. And cinematography by Gianfranco Marinetti. Who get this? He was the special effects camera operator on one of my favorite early creature features, Tentacles. Doctor, do you remember Tentacles?
I do remember Tentacles.
John Huston, Henry Fonda, Shelley Winter. Man, that's a banger. That's a real good flick. So anyway, I don't think
Henry Fonda's in anything that's called a banger. At least not the way we associate the term.
Didn't you ever see him on Golden Blonde?
That was not Henry Fonda.
Oh. I have been wrong before. I watch a lot of movies. Tubi, where we all watch this film, I'm assuming, for free.
Yes.
Their synopsis is one of the most accurate I've read recently. You ready for this? A splatter classic about a cursed country estate besieged by horny house guests and the unusual relationship between a mother and her creepy young son. Seems like they kind of buried the lead there. But the synopsis serves as proof once again that if you mention horny house guests, I will eventually watch your movie. It may take me a little time, but I'll get to it. And I like how the synopsis mentioned the country estate being besieged by horny house guests with no mention of the zombies besieging the thing. There's no mention.
That's where it was going. I thought it was going to be besieged by zombies, but no, it's besieged by horny house guests.
There's no mention.
They know what sells. They know what sells.
There's no mention of zombies in that synopsis. Just the mother and son and horniness.
Oh my God.
Which that tracks.
How do we get Cade to watch this movie?
All you got to do is just send and, just say the characters are horny.
That's how, they,
for no other reason, he's going to watch it to try and gauge their level of horniness. When you say they're horny, he's going to go, I wonder how horny they really are. And that's going to get him into it.
Pretty much.
I'm a curious person. I don't know.
Use the word horny, and it's going to...
Well, it's almost, like you boys said, like the writer knew that nobody would be talking about zombies after the end credits of this movie, so why bother? Which sucks, because there's some great zombies in this, but we'll get to that. So let's get into Burial Ground, shall we? Like, deep into it. Really deep.
Grab our shovels and start digging.
Do it. There's only one thing wrong with Burial Ground.
Oh, I disagree.
And that's, you can never watch it for the first time ever again. You only get one shot at watching this for the first time.
Some of us will be the only time. I mean, you can say that in every movie. Every movie, you only get to see it for the first time once.
Yeah, but this movie's special in that first viewing is... I'm sorry. I'm sure that Nick Cage movie was great, and I liked Late Night with the Devil, but... This movie, when you watch it for the first time, you get something that you just could never recapture upon subsequent viewings.
The need to take a long scalding shower?
Perhaps. Look at Tut's frozen face.
Yes.
There you go. The movie starts off with a heavily bearded, therefore wise, professor who, after...
At first I was hoping that the screen wouldn't freeze, and now I'm hoping it does.
After deciphering some rudimentary hieroglyphics on an ancient stone tablet he located in the tunnels underneath a country estate, he's devoured by some flesh-eating zombies. And when I say rudimentary hieroglyphics, I mean it. He's literally looking at the stone. It's got like a carving of a tree and a sun, and that's it. It looks like my kid did when they were 4 years old. He's like, good God, it must be true. What? The next morning,
symbologist.
No, dude, it's like a little tree like this with just some little branches off this, like a little Christmas tree, and then a little sun. Oh my God, no.
Are you a symbologist? No, you're not. Maybe if you read a book about symbology, you would understand what those little branches mean.
Are you talking to me or the professor?
You.
Oh.
The professor's obviously a symbologist. He's screaming, "Oh no! It can't be!"
He knew what
he
was
knows
going
what's up.
It's just a tree and a sun.
Well, to the untrained eye, yes.
I mean, you don't. Yeah, exactly.
I love Tut puffing out his chest. Like, you don't even know what a symbologist is, Holmes.
Yeah, it's Tom Hanks.
Huh? What'd you say?
The Da Vinci Code.
Oh, okay. Well, the next morning, three cars worth of horny house guests arrive at the country estate. The synopsis did not lie. And the place is elegant. It's enormous. And it's out in the middle of nowhere. Why are these carloads of horny house guests there? Who fucking knows? What's their association with the professor? Who fucking cares? It's three couples and a young boy. And the three couples waste no time. They get in. They throw their suitcases down. Start fires in the H bedroom. Has a big fireplace. And they just start screwing each other's brains out. Doctor. I'm glad you have your glasses on. Have you ever witnessed house guests with this amount of horniness coursing through their veins? This is dangerous level horniness. Or at least what I know about it. I defer to you.
It would seem extremely, extremely dangerous. God, they're so horny. I can't even imagine being that horny. Just horniness coursing through your veins. I would like to know more about why they were there at that mansion meeting the professor, but like you said, it really, I suppose when you, my God, the horniness.
Yeah.
I mean.
Doctor, let me put it this way. Do you think we'll ever watch a early 80s exploitation film again with this level of house guest horniness?
I sure hope so, but, I'm afraid it's just far too early to tell.
I was afraid you'd say that. I think you're right. Thank you, Doctor. We do learn, though. We do learn the next morning at breakfast that the professor is studying the magic practices that were used by the ancient, am I saying this right? Etruscans. Something about the survival of the dead, blah, blah, blah. The guy who owns the house is like, at least that's what I think he's doing down there. Glug, 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 glug. Turns out the castle, it's basically a castle, is owned by a charming rich dude named George who drinks J&B scotch for breakfast. And he's banging the sexpot single mom, Evelyn, who just had to drag along her terrifying 12-year-old son, Michael. But more on those two later. One cool thing about Burial Ground is that the first 10 minutes of the flick, when the horny house guests arrive, the zombies have already been unleashed in that opening scene with the professor. They're just slow as shit to make their way up out of the catacombs underneath the estate. But boom, we're already into it. They're coming. Slowly, surely, but they're on their way. They'll get there at some point. They're doing the best they can.
It's a slow burn.
So we have these cuts back and forth from the horn dogs frolicking all over the estate. The next day, they're screwing out in the lawn, the garden. They're humping everywhere. To these corroding monsters creeping closer and closer to the surface. I really dug the pacing. And even if it came at the expense, like you said, Doctor, you wish you kind of knew a little bit why they were there and what they were doing. It totally comes at the expense of absolutely zero plot or storytelling. But I like that within 10 minutes, the people are dumped here and the zombies are on their way. That's what you get. It's nice and simple.
No time is wasted. That is,
Tut, you're a college boy. Did I use the term catacombs correctly? Is that what, like, those tunnels underneath castles and shit are? Those catacombs?
Underground burial? Yes.
Yeah, and there's, like, statues down there and all sorts of...
There can be. It can be very crude. There doesn't have to be any statues, but there is usually some sort of ritual apparatus down there.
Okay. All right. Man, I'm going to get this out of the way because I have a feeling I'm going to get a little resistance on this film tonight.
Oh.
But I'm going to say this before I get too drunk. The framing of shots, the lighting, both indoors, there's some stairway shots that are just beautifully lit, and the outside natural lighting. The camera moves, shaky and unsteady when appropriate, smooth as butter when need be. Perfectly executed zooms, that trippy sound design. Everything from a production standpoint here is top fucking notch. It's a fantastic looking and sounding film all around.
Oh, I will give you.
No, be honest. Be honest. Don't begrudge it. You agree with me?
No. I'll give you part of that. I disagree with the sound design. The score was, but that's an objective type deal. That's just because that doesn't tickle my fancy doesn't mean that it's not good. But yeah, everything else was pretty much spot on. The lighting was great. The scene shots was great. I mean, that's one thing that I really, really love about 70s and that early 80s style as well, is that what you get is in the camera. There's no post up. There's no dark filters. There's no none of this. I mean, there are some blue filters for night shots, but man, it was really, really well done, and it was done in camera. I froze.
Well, we can hear you fine. What I love about especially about the Italians, like you're right.
Kate, you are right, except for my disagreement about the music.
You've got to do not unlike today. You can't do a zoom in post. I mean, I think you could, but you had to be ballsy enough to be like, I'm going to do a dramatic zoom in there. And you probably didn't get any other coverage of that shot. So these Italians zoom better than anybody's ever done a zoom shot. No American has ever done a zoom shot like an Italian.
And it's all on film. This is a lower budget, so you know that they're not taking take after take on this thing. That was all skill.
I was surprised how good the film looked. I thought that it was going to be a grainy VHS piece of dog shit.
Beautiful.
So it looked very good. Absolutely. I did not at any point throughout the movie, and I'm being honest, I did not at any point go, oh, wow, this is great sound design. I think that perhaps because it's dubbed, which is necessary, obviously it's a European film. Maybe that, prejudice.
That's a good point.
Away. Because I definitely recall thinking, wow, this looks good. If you put aside what you're looking at, it looks good. Yeah. I never really thought like, oh wow, I like the score or anything like that.
Okay. I did dig the score and the sound design. But I can completely see where that could not jive with you guys, but I'm glad you agreed on the look of the film. Because whether you like the movie or not, it's a fantastic looking film. Hey, Tut, speaking of fantastic things, if you folks at home were listening to me earlier, you know all about the newly released tubular shaped bits of fantasticness that were recently unleashed by our good friends over at Drew Estate. Dark, bold, and unapologetic. Blackened Cigars M81 is an intense journey into the uncharted, deepest, darkest, and heaviest depths of Maduro tobacco. A masterpiece collaboration between Metallica's James Hetfield, Sweet Amber Distilling's Rob Dietrich, and Drew Estate's Jonathan Drew, the All Maduro Blackened Cigars M81 by Drew Estate is rich, it's powerful, but beautifully balanced, offering tantalizing notes of leather, chocolate, and espresso that's perfect for both life celebrations and times of reflection. With that final commercial spot, I will say this. With this milk stout, which does kind of have a little bit of espresso on the aftertaste once you get yeah. past the creaminess. I'm going to shift gears after this beer to my IPA. Because I have a hunch there's more going on in this cigar than I'm giving it the chance to show itself with this heavy of a beer. And I think that might be the case for your beer too, with those thousands of flavors you got going on.
It very well could be, but you did enjoy the Irish cream deal,
it's
right?
It's the best, forget milk stout, it's the best stout I've had in quite some time.
Okay, I look forward to trying it.
It's, as a non-stout drinker, it's might be right up there at the top of the best stouts I've ever had. It's awesome.
I thought you and said I, non-stop drinker.
And
a non-stop drinker.
And I'm not a huge fan of the Temptress, their main stout. I like this better.
Yeah.
But I am going to switch beers and see what that does, because I really think that the milk chocolate and the cedar is really nice. That white pepper with the pine underneath it is nice, but I feel like there's something that I'm squashing with this beer, and I'm going to switch things up in a minute. So here we are. The zombies are getting closer and growing in numbers, while the orgasm count continues to rise at the country estate. You can tell that newlyweds George and Evelyn would like some more alone time like their friends are having, but little Michael's presence is a giant and massively disturbing wet blanket. Every time the couple gets close, Michael yells, and as the doctor just said, it is dubbed from Italian. So they got this little boy voice, mama, mama. And of course, every time he yells mama, he runs over, starts kissing her hand, and she embraces her baby boy. Now, there's a hilarious scene. You guys had to notice this, where George is teaching Evelyn how to shoot a pistol. And in the middle of it, Michael does his cling to mommy routine, mama, mama. And as George, he looks down as he tucks the gun into his waistband. He looks over at Michael with this look like, oh, I want to kill this little fucker. Like one shot, my life would be so much better. He just looked at him in disgust. But Evelyn, she loves that little weirdo son of hers. We'll get to that later. And she just, anytime he has anxiety or scared, she grabs him and just suffocates that little boy in her ample bosom. But again, more on those two later. The mother and the son, that is, not her boobs. Okay, damn. More on those four later. How's that? I suppose. This movie's going to get really complicated really fast. Stick with us, folks.
No,
it seems very straightforward as we take you through the film, but that's not the whole story.
It's
like a Paul Harvey at the end of this. I'm going to be like, and now for the rest of the story. The zombies move glacially slow, but with purpose. Their huge, swollen, calcified knuckles and thick, rotted green fingernails that we see in close-ups as the dead claw their way out of their shallow graves. Sunken eye sockets, pitch black noses, missing noses, all dripping with maggots. It's what I think these corpses would actually look like. It's exactly what I think if a zombie who had been underground and buried for a long time, I think that's what they would look like. Did y'all notice that one zombie with the vagina nose?
Yeah.
There were so many different ones. There was one that looked like Jason from Friday Part 7.
This guy literally, his nose was gone. He just had this kind of big open vagina on his face.
I didn't see that. They were disgusting. Yeah, it was definitely a good job done.
I'm gonna call it real quick before we get any further. I'm calling it. Prior to viewing Burial Ground, my favorite cinematic zombies were from Lucio Fulci's 1979 classic Zombie, or Zombie 2, if you want to be a technical asshole about it. But these zombies are my new favorite. They look fucking dead. They look like they've been dead for a really long fucking time. And whether it's the exposed, elongated teeth that kept growing or the worms spewing out of their fucked up eyeballs, eye sockets, everything about these undead bastards worked for me. They creep me out. You boys?
I'm going to disagree.
Oh, you're so
wrong. Yeah, sorry. For one thing, you can't have a 160, 180-pound zombie. I mean, now, granted, this is due to the technical limitations of the time. It's people dressed up. And I give them – well, it's hard to say I give them credit because that's the only choice that they had. There was no such thing as CGI at that point. But where I will give them credit for is the ballsiness for all the shit that they attempted to do in the facial shots and the close-ups. In today's environment, it would all be, the contrast would be turned way down, the blacks would be punched way up so you couldn't see it. They would try to hide all the practical effects of their masking stuff. But the 70s, the Italians didn't have the opportunity, so you get to see warts and all. And I will give them creative, I mean, dude, you have to be creative to come up with something.
There were not a lot of warts, my friend.
To me, there were. I looked at it and I was like, man.
Oh, look, to your point, Tut, I just love daylight zombies. There's so much hard to pull off because, like you said, you can't skimp at all. You can't rely on shadows and darkness to cover up your special effect shortcomings. And the fact that so much of this movie takes place with these zombies out in under the sun in broad daylight, I don't know. I thought they were the creepiest zombies ever. What movie zombies do you like better than this? Dawn of the Dead is a classic, arguably the best zombie movie ever made, but the zombies, a lot of them have blue paint on them. And
I like my zombies.
You like your blue zombies?
I like my George Romero zombies where there's just blue paint. That's why there's no denying they did a fantastic job in Burial Ground, visual effects wise, costumes, everything fantastic. I like my blue paint zombies.
I'm spoiled. I'm a modernist. I don't have a grudge against CGI. So I think that Walking Dead did excellent in their zombies.
Well, I've never seen it. I've seen some highlights. I think Burial Ground just knocked it out of the park. I'll leave it at that.
I'm always going. I hate to say that I'm anti CGI anymore. That seems like a crusty old man thing to say. But when things are done by hand, like they were back in the old days, I'm always going to really appreciate that. So, I can see where Kate is coming from. I like my zombies friendlier with the blue paint. I like that. But there was definitely an outstanding, a lot of hard work went into that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to discount any of that. I really don't. I don't want to sit there and be like, try to blow it off. But I have to be objective with modern times because we have modern audiences and we're saying, hey, modern audience, go back and look at this. And if they've just come off of Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, any of those lot of spinoffs, and, you know, they go into, even if you go into like the I Heart Zombie or whatever, the rom-com thing, everybody's got a modern take on zombie, it seems. And then have to have that filter in mind.
Yeah, but most of your modern zombies suck.
According to you guys.
Yeah, we know what we're talking about.
I didn't say they suck. I've come around on CGI. I like my zombies.
You go to the cemetery and dig up something, you're gonna find something that looks a lot more like these dudes than anything on.
Sometimes I need a cadaver and I can't get one. You tell me how else I'm supposed to go about it. If I, sorry.
No,
I'm afraid I just ixnay on that.
How are your experiments going, Doctor? To your experiments. I just poured a banger IPA. I'm going to let you know how that pairs with the cigar here in just a few moments. Well, hey, say what you want about these zombies. All of a sudden, there's an army of these creepy bastards finally attacking the horny house guests in the middle of the afternoon. Walking Dead. Give me a break.
It's not grave robbing if I don't actually break into anyone's house.
True.
Are That's we true. Still...
I think you're right, Doctor.
In theory, it's a guy I know.
And I mean, as far as I know, you're still doing this for scientific purposes, right? As far as I know.
The horny couples in the daylight and as a...
Okay, yeah. So flamboyant estate owner George gets eaten first. The zombies outnumber his bullets and they rip his guts out and feast on them. This sends a horrified Evelyn and Michael on the run after she sets a couple of the ghouls on fire. That was a cool sequence, her torching these things. One chick gets her ankle caught in a fucking bear trap as the zombies close in on her.
Bears at the estate.
This majestic Italian villa, all of a sudden you're out picking grapes and a fucking bear tackles you?
Might as well have her step on a landmine while you're at it.
What the hell is that? Well, she stepped in it.
It would make more sense to step in a landmine, actually.
You know what, though? Her boyfriend, the real doofus, he does have a good reaction when that happens. Like, you know what? I don't know why there's a bear trap at this fucking place. But if there is one, of course she stepped in it. He did that all with just his expression, like, oh, Jesus. Really? You notice everyone else here is fucking in the lawn. Nobody else got into a bear trap. So her boyfriend.
You're pretty.
Her boyfriend and some other horny house guests barely help her escape in the nick of time. And then they all flee back to the country estate together. Man, that scene where the mustache dude and his chick bash in the zombie skulls with those giant rocks, and it's just pus and worms and all sorts of squishy, gross pink stuff squirting all over the place. So awesome. Y'all know that disgusting, fluffy, it's called like pink salad that some people serve, crazy people serve at Thanksgiving? It's like a pink whipped cream, you know what I'm talking about?
Ambrosia or something like that. I think it's called ambrosia.
Now we know where that undefinable shit comes from. Etruscan, ancient Etruscan heads. Oh, you ever had that, Doctor? That ambrosia dessert?
Like that has never been served at a Thanksgiving I went to.
I've seen it on the table and I've.
I've actually ventured off into it and you're wise.
Oh, to me, it's like the dessert equivalent of green bean casserole. Yeah, no, no thanks.
When people are like, why don't you like Thanksgiving? I'm like,
because we got to eat all this weird shit that we never would touch otherwise.
Exactly.
Man, I guess it gets done right. We're at the doctor's family.
Be thankful.
Turkey
and thankful.
mashed turkey, mashed potatoes, stuffing, biscuits. The only green beans that are made, if you can call a green bean casserole, just green beans with chopped up bacon in it. That's not a casserole. That's just goodness.
No, that's not a casserole.
And some buttered corn. The sparkling wine flows. Man, we don't have that shit on the table there.
At our Thanksgiving, the only thing that could make it worse would be serving this beer.
Did you? Tut's gone from this looks like piss, I'm going to hate this, to hey, you know what? This isn't that bad. That now it's like come full circle. Now it just sucks again.
Yeah.
It's horrible. And I'm about to have a second one.
Yeah, you should
have. For science.
You're like the professor. Oh, God. It can't be true.
Wait, Tut, can I see that can again? Was there a moon and a star on it?
No, a tree
and
a sun.
Oh, man, that would have been awesome if it were. But there were not. Just a random shack.
No. And it makes no sense. It's like a zombie Don Johnson who's a lifeguard for some reason. Like, none of it is conceptually coherent at all.
No, I kind of like zombie Don Johnson.
They're like, you know what? Some doofus from who grew up in the 90s is going to see this and just buy it without even looking at it's a sour beer. And there comes Tut. Ooh. Zombie. Yeah.
From the 90s.
Wait, do you think Tut sounded like that when he was in the store? Oh, I'm out for a nice stroll in my local confectionery shop, and these beers are for sale. I think I'll try them.
And you know a dude who actually knew his stuff that worked there came up to Tut, like, can I help you? And Tut was all beer podcaster. Oh, I got this. I'm fine. I know what.
I'm okay with that. I think you were a little harsh on Tut, and they'll see what we have here in the.
Oh, I just like to go mug a beer.
Cold section of the.
I apologize if I was. I don't think Tut actually sounds like that.
I might pick up some macadamia nuts on the way out.
I will say there's a reason I don't go beer shopping with Tut. And you pretty much just portrayed it right there, Doctor.
Well, Tut, I'm going to go to the beer store with you and you get what you want.
Thank you. Thank you, Doc.
Maybe when you're there, Doctor, he'll actually look and see what kind of beer it is he's buying. Sorry, I'm just teasing.
My hypothesis that Tut doesn't sound like that in the store.
Doctor, after we've chosen our beers, let's say we get to the butcher shop.
You drive all the way up there, or I drive all the way up there, and we go beer shopping with us. So, Doc, what do you want to get today?
Come on, no.
No. No, it can't be true.
Oh.
Oh, well, night
on his wrist, he's got tattooed the little tree in the sun.
Night falls and the house guests and servants board up the doors and windows. We've seen that in a million zombie films, but it's a fruitless endeavor like it is in every zombie film as the undead cannot be stopped. Oh, and the zombies have now armed themselves with pickaxes and scythes.
I was about to say, these are smart zombies.
So that's not a good sign for our horny house guests.
That's a new touch. You don't see that often.
Yeah, zombies with tools.
They went out to the shed and actually got some gardening tools. One of the horny chicks gets pulled through a broken glass window, and we watch as a shard of glass punctures her face. Which, Doctor, is of course a direct ripoff or perhaps a respectful nod to Fulci's Zombie, where Olga Carlatos gets pulled through a window as we watch that sharpened sliver of wood puncture her eyeball. No surprise, Fulci did it better, but still, I appreciate it. It was an obvious acknowledgement to the Italian master of horror. It was basically the best they could do to rip it off, and they fell short, but there's also one overly stretched out set piece. I'm not going to heap just praise on this thing. If I need to, I'll call it out. There's a very long stretched out set piece that involves the wounded blonde woman. Wounded. She's got a bruise on her ankle. Fending off a bunch of zombies in an upstairs room with a giant spear of some sort. And it just goes on for way too long. Her watching the zombies break in, her jabbing them with this damn thing. But after that, That's at the hour mark. The last 30 minutes of this film are pure nonstop insanity. Are you boys ready for this?
I've been dreading this all week.
Actually, for weeks, because we were supposed to do this show last week. That's even worse. It just hung out with you. Actually, real quick, Todd, I'm actually approaching the final third here. Anything new?
No, not for me. I haven't changed the beer, but it's, yeah, you still got that nice pepper on the retro hill, and like you said, it never picked up aggression, so that was nice. I'm assuming there was some chocolate in there. Man, I sure would have loved to taste that, but no. After I started drinking the beer, there was no more of that left.
Did you get any oranges and passion fruit in the cigar?
Oh, I got a ton of passion fruit in this cigar. I could tell that the blenders really put passion into their blend. It was good. It doesn't offer you a lot. So if you like the note, then, you know, it's a great cigar. If you don't like the note, then, you know, you're going to be disappointed. But I thought it was a pretty, I've been enjoying it. I've had to relight it a couple of times, but that's not a big deal. We're sitting here talking.
But it's more than a coincidence. I've had to relight even when I wasn't talking. So that is not the best situation construction wise. But
yeah,
I will say this: I switched to the Banger Imperial IPA. Pretty much same profile. It didn't bring out anything new. It didn't get out of the way of anything that was previously there. Yeah. So I think that's kind of what this cigar is. So if you get anything different, let me know. But I think we've kind of figured this cigar out as some nice, mellow pepper on the nose backed by a little pine. And some cedar backed by a little milk chocolate on the draw. And it doesn't change from start to finish.
Yeah.
Tut, price, right. Well, price point?
Here's one thing that I will kind of.
Sorry. Yeah. You froze and it came into this really weird. it sounded you're like you were
speaking an uncomfortable dub.
It sounded like you were speaking in tongues. What were you gonna say, Ted?
1375. Okay.
No, that was my guess. Let me look.
1074.
No, I actually nailed this one. 1075. I'll be honest, to me, that's more than I would pay for the cigar again. I can get a cigar with a much more interesting, to me, flavor profile for under $10.
And but I think that's profile specific too. I mean, I think there might be palates that really dig this. And if they do dig this, then, you know, I think $10 is a great price point for it.
I don't really.
I mean, I'm not saying that I don't dig it, because I was going to say that I appreciate the fact that I've got this horrible beer that just blasts my palate. But the retro hail is so nice that I've been constantly retro hailing because there's a lot of flavor there.
Okay. So, I guess I was saying
I will give it that.
I guess I was thinking for $10.75, I could get a longer lasting smoke that would give me some cedar and milk chocolate. For, you know, $8 at the most. But we did obtain these cigars from the one and only Famous Smoke Shop. And you can go right. If what I just said didn't completely deter you to purchasing some Warped cigars, head on over to Famous Smoke Shop. I just screwed myself on this, didn't I? FamousSmokeShop.com. Grab a box on sale. And on top of that, use promo code TNCC20 to get an additional $20 off the cigar that Matt Cade said you could get a lot cheaper going with another brand.
But if you do have a beer podcast and you make the mistake of getting an absolute horrible beer, might not be a bad thing to get a 5-pack of this just in case. That way you can actually taste a cigar.
That's not bad advice. Also, if you are thinking about starting a beer podcast, I find it's always helpful when you're at the store to pay attention to the type of beer that you're purchasing. That way when you get home, or worse yet, on the air, your beer podcast, it's not like, oh, I bought this.
I don't think everybody has to go by the same set of rules.
No, no, Todd, don't close your laptop, buddy. Okay. Well, let me know if you get anything else in that last little bit. I don't think I am.
I think this, like you said, I think we pretty much figured this cigar out.
I think so. Well, as the zombies are barging their way in at night, a hysterical yet still always protective mother, Evelyn, grabs a machete, which is conveniently laying on a table there in a holster.
Of course it is.
And she starts slicing, dicing, and beheading zombies to protect her dear little Michael, who's cowering behind her. Mama, mama.
Oh, God.
The two of them retreat to a separate quiet room afterwards, away from the rest of the remaining house guests, and something happens, which causes Michael to run away. More on that something later. He quickly encounters one of the newly dead female house guests who, with her giant wide eyes and outstretched arms, comes across as more demon-possessed than resurrected, and she pounces on the little squirt. When his mama finds her little lad, the bug-eyed zombie chick in white go-go boots is gnawing down on his severed leg. Yeah, little Mikey's toast. And apparently tasty toast. This chick is going crazy eating this little guy. If I'm going to heap all the praises on Burial Ground, I also have to shine a light on its missteps, as I said before. And the performance of this particular zombie chick is just laughably awful. From her just crazy eyes to, like, Lady Frankenstein arms. Fortunately, a furious Evelyn bashes that chick zombie's head against a bathtub repeatedly for killing and eating her son's leg, so we don't have to deal with her nonsense anymore. Evelyn takes care of that for us. Like a good mom should. After all of this mayhem and craziness that we've just seen starting back at breakfast, one of the horned dudes.
I made a bad mistake. This beer is going to make me throw up once we get to the climax of this thing.
Yeah, that's what'll make you throw up. What? After all this they've been through, and they've killed like 100 of these things trying to eat them, one of the horny dudes offers up this gem of a solution. Let's just let them inside the house. Maybe it's not us they're looking for. They'll leave us alone. Dude.
What?
They didn't leave you alone when you were fucking out in the gazebo. They didn't leave you the fuck alone when you came in. What? But dude, these other horny dudes and chicks are so stupid. They're like, yes. You know, okay, let's do this.
Maybe he's operating under the theory that the zombies themselves are very horny and that everybody was having sex. So the zombies just kind of showed up and watched that. And if they just, you know, can, for the love of God, control themselves for a few minutes, maybe the zombies will go away.
Like maybe they were releasing a pheromone into the sky that attracted the zombies.
Well, the zombies are just terrible perverts.
What do you think the second limb on that carving was?
Tut is a symbologist. Who knew?
It was a wang. See? Professor knew it.
Seriously, though, when he said that and everybody's like, yeah, good call, Craig, or whatever his name is. Like, guess how that works out, guys.
As you would expect.
Yeah. What a dummy. Oh, yeah. Remember the professor? Speaking of symbologists. Well, he shows back up and he tears out the throat of the poor butler and dines on his stringy flesh and all his organs. I'll tell you what, though. I'd still rather eat Nicholas the butler's gallbladder than that pink ambrosia bullshit nonsense at Thanksgiving dinner. Ugh.
I agree.
I'm abstaining from both of them if I can.
Don't ever do it. Don't ever.
Well, Dawn arrives, And the four remaining horny house guests finally escape from the estate and wander aimlessly through the woods until they come across a monastery. The men are having to drag both Evelyn, who's still in shock from seeing her son Michael dead, and the blonde chick with the bruised ankle who simply can't go on. Just leave me. I can't.
Okay. Well, she's pretty.
It's a bruise, not a break. And I don't think any. I don't think anyone.
Yeah, she came out of a bear trap. I mean, it's going to hurt.
It didn't puncture her. It hurts. I get it.
It'd have broken her ankle.
Yeah. Deep tissue sprain.
They said it was just a bruise. I don't think any one of us here would blame these dudes for just leaving her behind to keep the zombies busy at this point.
No way, man. No, she's too good looking for that.
She's the least good looking of the chicks that the horny house guests.
Now we know where we stand, Hutt, if we're ever on a out somewhere with Cade and run afoul of some zombies.
Oh, I've already known this.
I mean,
that's why I hit the treadmill.
Leave the doctor here. He's a liability.
It's just a bruise. I can't make it.
He's the one who places the bear trap.
Yeah, right?
I mean, you might be onto something there. I don't
know. That old joke, I don't have to outrun the zombie, I just have to outrun you.
Exactly. Yeah. He's gonna Tonya Harding you while you're trying to go up the stairs.
Son of a bitch.
Well, hopefully we never have to find ourselves in that scenario. But if we ever did get invited to a country estate for the weekend, I think we would take the term horny house guest to exciting new levels. Am I right?
I don't know how to feel about this.
It's not just going to be us, though, right? I mean,
there'd be girls there.
Oh, okay.
Right. That'd be weird if it was like
still a little better.
Three horny house guests show up at a country estate. It's just us three.
And that would track too. That's fair.
I'm all tut. Hurry up. Grab your bags out of the Subaru. I got a fire going.
This isn't the way I saw the weekend going.
As soon as he starts talking like that, it's when I get the bear trap out. All right. I didn't want to do this soon, but
I think it would be great if we could find some extra critters around here.
I do like Todd embracing the voice. Makes me feel better.
It's horrible.
They see a monk in the distance, but he ignores their calls for help. Upon entering the monastery, Mustache Man discovers a chapel upstairs where all the hooded monks are bowed down in prayer. I'm sorry, even if
my second beer was almost going to be the Stash IPA.
Oh, I would have given you points for that. Sure. The guy had a glorious mustache. He pleads with the monks to provide aid for he and his friends. We have no one. But then the monks begin to look up from their robes and holy shit, they're zombies. That one zombie monk with the dark maroon stained face and no eyes. Oh, come on. Those shots of those monks' faces as they look at him. That's creepy shit. You guys didn't find that at all disturbing?
It was a good scene, I think.
I thought it was really fucking creepy. They rip Mustache Man open and chow down on his remaining corpse. And the two women... They rip Mustache Man open and chow down on him as the remaining... I called the remaining bozo a corpse already because he might as well be. And the two women flee the monastery with the undead in hot pursuit yet again. Hot pursuit, Tut?
I heard you.
It's not
really hot pursuit, it's though, not, because it's like shambling.
It's not exactly hot pursuit, but that makes 166 episodes in a row I've used the term hot pursuit, so forgive me. In actuality, it's a lukewarm pursuit at best.
I don't even say that. Yeah.
Yeah, they're just kind of shuffling around. Pursuit. The trio arrives at a random model building.
It's literally like a TNCC pub crawl at this point. I mean,
yeah, that's accurate. hey, it's 3 a.m. We got to get Kate out of here. That's the speed in which these zombies are in hot pursuit.
That, Tut, is when you need a bear trap.
I had, and it doesn't work.
The trio arrives at a random model building workshop down the dirt road, and despite their best efforts to block the doors and barricade themselves in, the zombies break through, and there's just no stopping them. Fresh on the scene, zombie Michael, little 12-year-old Michael, enters the room, which was weird. He walks in through this upstairs
on
door
both legs
with no limp. He got his leg ripped off and was eaten by a chair.
Was it a leg or was it an arm? I really don't want to get into this. I can't believe I'm saying it, but I didn't think they were very clear on what she was actually chewing on.
I thought it was his leg, for sure.
I thought it was his arm.
Well, he had both arms in this scene, too, so that makes no sense either. And his mother, Evelyn, is elated to see him, despite her horny friends pleading with her, Evelyn, he's a zombie. Don't touch him. And yep, Michael does, in fact, kill his mother. But more on that in a few minutes. Boy. Mama Evelyn, though, her guttural scream as Michael's ripping her apart is just fucking harsh on your eardrum. For such a beautiful woman to be like she, her death yowl was just, it worked for me.
Her death was just, ew.
I'll go with,
ugh. Well, we're all going, ugh, for other reasons, but man, her death scream was just really harsh on the eardrums. She really sold the pain of her death and the manner in which she died. More on that in just a minute. Or I should say, the voiceover actress who dubbed Evelyn's lines.
That's true.
She had a fantastic death scream. Whatever it was, potato, patuto.
That's because she was looking at it going, ooh.
Potato, patuto, it worked. It worked.
I don't think patuto is how you say it, but okay.
Potato. Potato, patuto. Potato, patuto.
Exactly how you say it.
Potato, patuto. So incapacitated ankle bruised girl and her doofus boyfriend are the only living folks left standing. The zombie monks shove doofus's face into a spinning rotary saw blade that they turned on. And then they descend down on his lady friend. She screams as the rotting zombie's hands cover her face. And then the screen actually freeze frames. And we're given this quote written out on the screen. The earth shall tremble. Graves shall open. They shall come among the living as messengers of death, and there shall be the Knights of Terror. And that was from the Prophecy of the Black Spider, which I Googled, and that's not actually a real thing.
Did you notice they spelled knights wrong?
Although, no. The Prophecy of the Black Spider, when I Googled it, it's not a literary thing. But a bunch of really hardcore, like, death metal bands have come out with albums named that, I think, based on this movie. The end. That's the end of Burial Ground.
You notice, though, in Knights, they didn't spell it N-I-G-H-T. It was N-I-H-G-T-S. They've been a big typo there.
Wait. N-I-G-H-T-S?
No, that's they didn't spell it that way.
How'd they spell it?
They had the H in front of the G.
Oh, it was just a misspelling?
Yeah.
Well, that's how the Black Spider spelled
it. Yeah, so the Black Spider.
Yeah, you and your Black Spider. Okay. So it seems like we just walked you through a fairly straightforward early 80s cookie cutter zombie film. Zombies chasing horny people around, zombies win. That would not be an accurate summation of Burial Ground,
and then, we're gonna roll credits, and this is it. We're going. That's good night, folks. Bye.
The reason why is two things.
Nice try, Tut. I respected your effort.
Okay.
Two things make this film. Well, it's why we're here talking about it, and those two things are Evelyn and her son Michael. Where do I begin to start? From the moment that young Michael spies on his smoking hot mom having sex in one of the ridiculously extravagant guest rooms with her gentleman suitor, George, it's a bizarre scene because the door slams open and you see this hulking shadow slowly approach the door. She's laying there with her titties out and he's like, oh, what the hell? And you know that zombies are approaching. So you think that this thing, this shadow approaching the door that just flung open is a zombie. But then.
And you're right.
No, you're not right, Tut. It's Michael, who just stands in the doorway watching them.
And let's be real, even alive, he looks like a zombie.
Yeah, he's very, very creepy looking.
It's a bizarre scene that only barely foreshadows the bizarreness that's yet to come. First off, young Michael is played by an actor in his 20s, maybe.
No way, 30.
Pietro Barzocchini, a.k.a. Peter Bark, is what he goes by in the credits.
And if he's in his 20s, he survived a night on the Travis Tritt tour. I'm just going to say that's a rough-looking 20s. I've been there. I've seen it, so...
Get this, Tut. His IMDb bio, no bullshit, tells us this. Peter Bark was a supremely creepy and unnerving Italian midget thespian who was reportedly born in 1955. There's a lot to unpack there. First of all, reportedly born? That's what researchers say when they're guessing the age of like a shark or a whale that they're tracking. Like, not a human being. You're telling me Italy didn't have birth certificates in the 50s?
It was post-war. I mean, you know, there was a lot of infrastructure damage.
Maybe they just didn't issue them for creepy, unnerving midget babies?
Well, and what's weird, well, there's a lot that's weird, but he does not look physically like a little person. You know, the little people, you know, he doesn't. Warwick Davis, I mean, you know, I just watched High Plains Drifter with a Billy Curtis that was in Wizard of Oz. He doesn't look like a little person.
No,
he's just small.
He's just a small.
He's a full-grown adult, but small. He's like 4 foot.
Yeah, his arms and legs are in proportion. They're not like
But he doesn't suffer from dwarfism. I mean, it's just short.
Kate is not making this up. I read the IMDb. They referred to him as a creepy, unnerving Italian midget and
thespian.
Political correctness aside, he doesn't look like a midget, or as they like to be called, little people. He's very skinny. He has the body of a 11 or 12 year old.
As for the rest,
he's like a 12 year old with a grown ass head
and face. See, we got like a little double. He's got like a little double chin.
Very creepy and unnerving. That's an accurate assessment.
He's got bags under his eyes. Yeah. I mean,
other than the suspicious birthday and stuff, that bio is pretty spot on. So not only is the actor playing young Michael in his mid-20s, maybe, who knows where this person came from or where they were born, but for some reason, you guys tell me what I think. They plopped like a black, pitch black toupee on this kid, which somehow actually makes him even more creepy, which doesn't seem at all possible, but they did it. Dude, wasn't that like a little black wig on this kid?
That never registered with me. I just noticed how creepy he was. The hair never registered.
There's some scenes where she's caressing him, and I thought it kind of lifted up like a toupee, which if you think that like, oh, God, he's like a little bald Italian midget, that's even way weirder.
It's because when she started caressing him, I went like, I'm like, my eyes would show a little bit.
You know, you'd be forgiven if you looked away. Okay. So now that we know the actor involved as Michael, to say that Michael was clingy to his mama, Evelyn, would be a major understatement. And super sexy, Evelyn is just fine with it. She adores her little man, quite literally. Let me ask you this. Do you guys think that her being so sexual, we see her with her new husband, and attractive, she is fucking
just good looking woman.
Good looking. Do you think that made everything between her and Michael even more stomach churning, even more warped?
No.
If she was a butterface, it wouldn't be nearly as effective.
To me, I think it's just fucking creepy. I mean.
No,
I'm gonna look whether that's Roseanne Barr or her. I'm gonna be turning away. I mean,
No. Agreed.
I can't believe what you just said. If she's a butterface, this whole thing where he's trying to cope his mother isn't nearly as a.
No, no, no. It's
Pretty
always
fair.
going to be. It's always going to be creepy and inappropriate. But yeah, I've seen it in horror film. We watched it in Butcher Baker, Nightmare Maker, where the chick was in love with her son, and but she was it was Susan Tyrell. She had crazy hair and she was a psycho, and it was like.
But I think that's her because she was acting psycho, and this Evelyn wasn't. Evelyn wasn't
well,
balls
Evelyn.
Crazy.
Well, she does. I'm going to get to some things she does.
Yeah,
that are...
yeah. She, and that's what makes it crazy is that it was kind of not. I mean, if the other girl does it, you can kind of see it. Evelyn, you can't.
Well, after he peeps in on mommy getting banged, like my second beer.
And maybe you got a point. I mean, maybe you're like. Hey man, these guys that are in the audience are going to want to bang this chick. Now watch this. They're not going to want to do it after this.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think there's really an they raised the bar by making her so damn hot.
I regretfully agree.
If you're watching a modern movie about a 12-year-old boy, mama. Who's really into his mom, and it's Kathy Bates or Megan Fox. I think it's way more creepy that it's Megan Fox.
I'm turning it off in either case. What is this disgusting shit?
Kathy Bates lacks circles around her. She'll sell it.
First of all, Kathy Bates isn't lapping circles around anybody.
No. Yeah, I did say that, her didn't I? In her talent.
Well, yeah, I mean, Kathy Bates would obviously never be in Burial Ground.
Actually, with the shape I'm in, Kathy Bates is probably laughing.
I was going to say, who the fuck are we to crack jokes about Kathy? Anyway, so after he peeps in the mommy getting banged, and after the zombies have started, assault in the mansion, there's a scene where Evelyn and Michael escape the undead, only to find a small parlor room where they sit on a bench to catch their breath. I need to stay close to you, Mama. Of course, my poor darling. While she's consoling him, he starts kissing her neck, kissing her cheek, kissing her lips, which she returns those kisses, and she's totally okay with all of this. He pulls down her blouse to expose her breast, and she's okay with that, too. When I was a baby, you would always hold me to your breast. I loved your breasts so much, Mama. It's only when Lil Mikey slides his hand between her legs that she slaps the shit out of him. What's wrong, Mama? I'm your son. He just answered his own question, obviously. That's what's wrong, you idiot. Okay. I realize I've never done a show like this where I watch through the movie and I'm like, oh, by the way, we left out the most disturbing thing we've ever seen in our entire lives. So I'm going to give it its own little,
Of course you are.
A little prologue at the end.
And that's saying something because we covered Fuck Manicus.
Yeah, no, you know, this is our Mother's Day episode. We did Father's Day. This, you know, this, here we are. Then
I am now going to throw up. Excuse me.
When Michael and his unnerving, creepy Italian boner run off away from mom after she slaps him, he gets killed by the horny female house guest zombie, and when his mother discovers her body, she cradles him in his arms, and she presses his face against her chest. And I literally said out loud, here in the corner of No Hope, as I was watching this movie, oh shit, he's totally going to bite her fucking titty. Yeah, like, Burial Ground... You have just cemented your place. You are, first of all, I was like, all right, now I know we're talking about this on the podcast, but I'm ready to research Burial Ground action figures and collectibles to put up out here with all this other shit I got. I'm like, I can't believe this is happening, but he doesn't. He just died. He just lays there and it doesn't happen. And I was like, fuck, they blew it. If any movie had the fucking balls to do it, this is the movie, and they They totally dropped the ball. They didn't do it, and I was pissed off. But then, in the final climactic showdown between the three survivors and the undead, an overjoyed Evelyn, who sees Michael back from the dead for the first time, she clutches her baby boy to her chest. My baby boy, we'll never leave each other again. And this time, she willfully gives him the nipple. Go ahead, darling. I know that you want to. You used to love it so. And sure as shit, right as she starts moaning, that's right, she moans, which that raises way more questions for show. That little bastard bites her fucking titty off. Not only does he rip it off, he tears at it and they cut back to him a couple times, gobbling down on her severed knocker with a vengeance like some forbidden beef jerky. It's a phenomenal payoff to an absolutely insane story thread. And I was so relieved and so happy that they actually had the guts to go for it. French composer Philippe Leroux says that every great, memorable piece of music needs that one moment of madness. And I think it's clear to a blind man here that Burial Ground has several of these moments, and they all involve Michael and his mother, Evelyn, and God bless this film for it. Dude, I don't know what made the screenwriters drop this in there, other than to separate this from a huge wave of other zombie exploitation films coming out at the time. We got to do something different.
They're heroin addicts?
Yeah, there had to be some kind of influence involved from wherever it came from. You just don't think of that like, hey, what about if the mom and son are banging? Let's do that.
Oh, what, Quagmire's on the writing staff?
Hey, dude, I've seen it all, man. Or I thought I'd seen it all, man. I've been watching every horror movie I can get my hands on since before I was a teenager. I thought I had seen it all. And the minute I saw fucking Burial Ground, it excited me. Not because of that. No, mm-hmm. No. It excited me because I saw something I had never seen before. And it made me think, oh, what else? There's other horror flicks out there that I haven't seen that could actually, I thought I'd seen everything until this. And that's a cool feeling, even if it involves the creepiest, most disgusting things you could ever imagine. Dude, the worms coming out of the guy's face is nothing compared to Mama.
I guess I have aged. I thought the entire
I have aged in the last 10 days since I saw this movie.
No, I watched it today for the first time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I was planning to watch it beforehand anyway, and then the show got canceled last week, so I only finished it a few hours ago. Man, I don't know. Maybe 20 years ago. To me, it's just like, it's just gross. The whole thing's just gross. I'm not impressed anymore by. I mean, I know, like you mentioned, Dawn of the Dead. I'm just not impressed by people ripping flesh and eating flesh anymore. Maybe when I was younger, that was something that looked cool on screen. I'm just not interested in that.
Doctor, I am with you. I have said numerous times on this podcast that I've been done with the zombie genre for a long time. I haven't seen anything new or exciting that made me want to talk about zombie films. The only ones we've done here on the show, I believe, are the classic, you know, Return of Living Dead, I know we did. And then we may have done
Maggie, which technically qualifies.
Did we do something with the Boy Scouts and zombies or something?
Yes. Boy Scouts,
Zombie Apocalypse.
Zombievers, which I guess would have been a good title for this film too. I avoid zombie films. I don't seek them out and I don't watch them, even the ones that come with good word of mouth. But I did not. Well, it helped that I really dug the zombies in this film, the aesthetic and the look. But I can't remember a time where I went from that high of I can't believe they're going to do this, and then they didn't do it, and then I kind of gave up on the movie, and I was like, man, And then they did it. They actually did come back and do it. But what they did was so fucking crazy that I could never just tell you guys without the benefit of us having a podcast, like, hey, I want you to watch this movie Burial Ground. And then I wanted to talk about it. There's no way you do that. And there's no way you talk to me about it afterwards. Like, that'd be weird. Me just calling Tut on the phone. Like, so would you, what'd you think after, when Evelyn? No, I mean, that'd be weird.
I gotta go. Bye.
Mama, help me. I just was like, this movie is custom made for TNCC because it's custom made to talk about. And
I think part of what, and forgive me if I'm imposing too much or superimposing too much or whatever the word is, but I think because of your background as a filmmaker, you appreciate the challenges not only from making it. I think that's why you're enamored with like the practical effects of the zombies. I think that's why, you know, you're drawn to the look of the film, the shotting of the film. And I also think that you're drawn to the storytelling because I know that you've run into plot conversations to where you want to do something and everybody's telling you, no, that's a step too far. So you're aware that those conversations are had. And these guys said they didn't have that person there to tell them, no, don't go this step too far. And this is the result. And you, as the storyteller, are like, this is the greatest thing ever. And me and Mincy, as the audience, are reacting exactly as the audience should.
I think.
Just.
I think there could be very well something to that, Todd. I think that's a very introspective response. I almost forgive you for saying the shotting of the film.
Oh, it's the stupid beards. Turn my tongue up.
Yeah. So many films I feel like are crippled by the guy over in the corner going, too far. And it's like, okay, well, you just made a movie that's like every other movie. No guys need to occasionally be like, fine, I'll give you this one. And they do sometimes, and it makes for an interesting little moment of film. This is a big fucking, all right, go for it. Like this. But I'm convinced it's the only reason anyone is talking about Burial Ground. It's,
well, that and the 40 years, the straight up creepiness of the of Michael. I think that even if you left that shot out, just the creep factor of Michael, dude, I think would have sustained it in cult classics.
No. I'm telling you right now, I thought he was creepy when he didn't bite it in that first scene. I was done with Michael and I was done with how cool I thought this movie was because I thought the no guys won. And I know Italian horror movies, they don't have no guys. So I was like, you know what? They just did it for whatever reason. They dropped the ball. Fuck this movie. Fuck Michael. And then when they did it, oh man. Yeah.
I feel bad for your therapist.
No guys didn't win. They already had the scene where he was sticking his hand into her crotch and she had to slap him and make him run away. Nope, the no guys didn't win.
I was shocked at that. I was shocked that they went that far. That was
terribly unsettling. This was just, but what the, at this point, what the hell? At this point, there is no guy on set. He disappeared a long time ago.
No, he got stuck in a bear trap. The no guy was walking to set and stepped in the bear trap.
Also, I disagree with the idea that just because I never saw something, that means it's awesome. Or this is unique. This never happened before. Therefore, it's awesome. That doesn't always
happen. No. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to imply that. I've seen a lot of movies where they showed me something I'd never seen before and it was terrible. I, for whatever reason, thought that these fuckers were just, let's make this thing as sleazy and make guys who can, normally don't get really offended by anything squirm in their britches like you two are like, oh, God. Ugh. Like, they did it. They made you guys get disgusted and feel really gross.
That doesn't take talent. I can do that. I just don't want to.
Well, I
don't see that being an accomplishment.
I think it is. I think any kind of art that can provoke that kind of response. And on the other side of the spectrum, you got guys like you, and then you got a guy like me who's just like, oh, fuck, that was crazy. Yes, it's disgusting. Yes, it's immoral. Yes, it's just the most bizarre shit I'd ever seen. But man, there's a zombie movie I didn't regret watching. I can't say the same about the fucking Boy Scout movie or whatever the hell that was.
You know what? I take it back. I don't feel sorry for your therapist. I feel sorry for my therapist.
Because you just talk about me the whole time?
I don't know. I mean, I've seen a ton of gory movies. I have a pretty strong stomach. That stuff just doesn't really bother me. I don't really squeam, you know, squirm and turn away from gore. Well, see,
and that's where I thought it worked, because it's like, all right, every zombie movie from 1978 to late 80s, just how many guts and
I was about to say, keep in mind we're seeing this from decades old lenses. You know, audience goers in the 70s, they hadn't seen all that the shock and gore.
That's true, too.
That's a relatively new thing.
And also, I mean, if you watch a lot of horror from that time period, nobody would have ever attempted this kind of stunt other than the Italians. The Italians, they lived for this kind of crazy.
No one would attempt it now.
No, God, no. But man, I just have this really soft spot in my heart for the Italian horror guys of the 80s and late 70s, because they just didn't give a fuck. If it made people throw up, whether it was blood and guts or little creepy Italian midgets fondling their mommies, they just do it. Let's throw it all out there and see what works. It's crazy. I don't know. Hey, it doesn't need to, we don't all need to feel the same. We don't all need to agree on everything, but at the end of the day, I made you guys watch it, so.
Yes, you did.
That you did. I never would have watched it if I hadn't been instructed.
I will say this. I've defended this movie to the death tonight, but there are some moments where I thought the filmmakers, or most likely the director, allowed his nearly, in my mind, obviously not Tut's, perfect zombies to break their own rules. And that is one thing in zombie movies that I don't like, when they break their own rules. When one of them started to climb a stone pillar to get up there, up to that point, these guys are super fucking slow and not any kind. And all of a sudden they show this one kind of Spider-Man in his way up this pillar to get in the estate. And then later on, a zombie throws a railroad spike like a ninja star two stories up in the sky and expertly pins that poor maid's hand to the windowsill with it. These zombies showed no signs of being able to do shit like that previously or moving forward. There's also one moment during the scene in the model building workshop at the end where just a quick cut of a zombie beating against that iron kind of grated door, it looked like an Italian dude just wearing a drugstore plastic Halloween mask. And I'm like, it was so jarring.
That was the only one?
No, I was like, dude, you spent so much time on every one of these zombies' faces with the bulging eyeballs, the maggots, the worms, the flaky scalp, like everything so precise. And then literally it's just a dude with this crazy zombie stupid mask on. And I was like, I just couldn't believe they let that shit sneak in there.
Hey, we ran out of budget, huh?
And I'll say this, my last thing, the first thing tonight, maybe that you guys will agree with me on. Burial Ground is one of the rare films that I firmly believe you have to either absolutely embrace and love it with all your heart, or you'll just completely dismiss it and piss all over it. I don't think there can be any in between. I think it's impossible. You either have to just fucking love this movie or just fucking hate it. And there's, Burial Ground has no middle ground. I don't think it's possible.
I'll agree with that assessment. I'd throw in the add-on that if you're one of the people that loves it, you got something wrong with you.
Seek help.
Well, I've never said I don't have stuff wrong with me. I don't have, I don't have. Well, you know, we've probably beaten this horse to death.
We've all got stuff wrong with us. Doesn't matter.
Very true words. Very true words. I'll end it with it. I just love when movies go there, and then I think they didn't go there, and I'm bummed out. And then they's like, oh, don't worry, we'll go there. And then they do it, and you mix in what I thought were the most aesthetically awesome zombies that I ever seen. They were right up there with Fulci's, but there was just so many more of them and so much more action on screen. I really liked the look of the film, the look of the zombies, and boy, they just added that little zest on top, that little twist of lime, and it became something that and don't you out there listening or watching us on YouTube or listening to podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast delivered to you, don't be some sacrimonious asshole. I know you're going to Tubi right now and scrolling through for all the little Michael scenes to see. And you know what? You're welcome. You're fucking welcome. Because you've never seen anything like it, and you'll never see anything like it again. And there is something of value in that, in my mind. Tut! Give these people... Give the people who haven't thrown up and... thrown their earbuds into the fire, some links.
Well, you can watch this at YouTube at Tuesday Night Cigar Club, but you're not going to watch it because you're already on Tubi trying to scroll through all the Michael scenes. You can see us on it. You can see us on Facebook, Tuesday Night Cigar Club. Join us on Instagram at TNCC_podcast. If you want to buy some Warp cigars, like Kate said earlier, go to the website, click on the Famous Smoke Shop banner. It'll automatically input the TNCC20 code for you. Get you $20 off of an order over $100, and that's a pretty good deal. And put the Tubi down.
I will don't put the Tubi down. I will say this. I did switch beers, to the Banger Imperial IPA. It did nothing for the cigar was the exact same. So I actually think the Irish Cream Temptress was, actually a better beer to pair with it because it did bring that, the creaminess and the coffee flavors that I wasn't getting from the cigar. And that, man, this cigar.
Yeah, once I got, I'm sorry.
The cigar never changed.
No, it didn't. And once it got down into the final third, I've been having to babysit this. I mean, just light and light and light.
Yeah, I've had the same issue, which, you know, the shit gets old. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for our first and last Mother's Day spectacular bonanza. We'll never do this again. Yeah, it's been nice having you as an audience member. I realize we'll never have you back again. And, I get it. I get it. It's a lot. It's a lot. And, it's not you. It's us. Actually, it's not us. It's me. It's me. And, I'm not going to apologize for it, but I understand that we'll never be able to entertain you again. And I'm willing to take that loss for the simple fact that I made Tut watch Burial Ground, Titties of Terror.
Let's face it. If you're watching it at this point, we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
We will see you next time. Don't lie. We'll see you. May the wings, in the meantime, may the wings of liberty never lose a feather. Just like Evelyn's. Okay. Sayonara, motherfuckers. We will see you next time.
A 1988 cigar, that sure takes me back. To learn about the tie back in 1988 when I decided to put my money where my mouth was and I opened up Keith's Bikini Shop along the boardwalk of beautiful New Smyrna Beach, Florida. Please, just trust me when I tell you there's not much to learn, so please, just move along. Move along. And channel your silly little curiosities elsewhere. Okay, fine. You see, New Smyrna Beach is well known as the shark attack capital of the world. Well known, that is, to everyone except for yours truly, Keith A. Howell. I put my heart and soul into that shop, as well as every dollar I made from the sale of my acoustic folk album. Yes, that's right, you remember, Simply Keith. And then the very first dude I sold a banana hammock to on the shop's opening day proceeded to take a swim and get his banana chomped off by a lemon shark maybe like 5 minutes later. Can you believe that shit? A fucking lemon shark. So yada yada yada, they closed the beach down and I didn't see another customer for like a month. And then when we finally reopened our doors, I sold a beautiful bright red Speedo, you know, maybe one size too small, to a guy, and he proceeded to get his nuts pounded repeatedly 10 minutes later by a hammerhead shark while boogie boarding. The hammerhead actually used its head like a hammer, whap, 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 and just wailed on the poor bastard's balls over and over again. I mean, who has ever heard of such a thing? I hadn't. And unfortunately, there wasn't a nurse shark around anywhere to provide, you know, aid, or whatever they call it these days. So, like, the guy's nutsack ends up swollen bigger than a fat lady's ankles, and it stays that way for several weeks. And that, my friends, was the end of Keith's Bikini Shop, which apparently stocked zero bikinis and only skimpy men's bathing trunks for some reason that escapes me. Oh, those 1980s summer nights. Wow. Oh, yeah, I almost forgot. To learn more about the cigars enjoyed on tonight's episode, please visit warpcigars.com. For more on O'Brien's Irish Pub, the live music leader in Central Texas, please visit O'BriensTemple.com and download their free smartphone app, where you'll find full beer listings including over 40 on tap, menu information, and a calendar of upcoming live events. To listen and purchase music heard on tonight's program, check out www.fritzbeermusic.com. Thank you for listening to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast. This is Keith A. Howell saying until next time, friends, unless we see you sooner at the pub. So keep it smoky, and for God's sake, keep it ballsy as well.